This is Audible.
Hi, this is Richard Brody, reading my book, Virus of the Mind, The New Science of the Mean. Introduction, Crisis of the Mind. The long-awaited scientific theory unifying biology, psychology, and cognitive science is here. An interdisciplinary effort by scientists over the last 20 years or so, really back to 1859 and Charles Darwin, has produced a new science called memetics. The science of memetics is based on evolution. Darwin's theory of the evolution of species by natural selection utterly transformed the field of biology. Scientists are now applying modern evolutionary theory to the way the mind works, the way people learn and grow, and the way culture progresses. In so doing, the field of psychology will ultimately be as transformed by the scientists researching memetics as biology was by Darwin. For those of us who yearn to understand ourselves, learning about memetics gives us a huge amount of satisfaction. I also believe that people who understand memetics will have an increasing advantage in life, especially in preventing themselves from being manipulated or taken advantage of. If you better understand how your mind works, you can better navigate through a world of increasingly subtle manipulation. Viruses of the mind have been with us throughout history, but they are constantly evolving and changing. They are infectious pieces of our culture that spread rapidly throughout a population, altering people's thoughts and lives in their wake. Mind viruses include everything from the relatively harmless examples, such as miniskirts and slang phrases, to those that seriously derail people's lives, such as the cycle of unwed mothers on welfare, the Crips and Bloods youth gangs, and the Branch Davidian religious cult. When these pieces of culture are ones we like, there's no problem. However, just as the computer virus programs computers with instructions to destroy their data, viruses of the mind can program us to think and behave in ways that are destructive to our lives. The most profound insight from the science of memetics is this. Your thoughts are not always your own original ideas. You can catch thoughts. You get infected with them, both directly from other people and indirectly from viruses of the mind. People don't seem to like the idea that they aren't in control of their thoughts. The reluctance of people to even consider this notion is probably the main reason the scientific work done so far is not better known. As we'll see, ideas people don't like have a hard time catching on. Further compounding the problem is that you don't immediately know whether the programming you get from a given mind virus is harmful or beneficial. Nobody ever joined a religious cult with the intention of getting brainwashed, moving to Guyana, and committing suicide. When the teenage Bill Gates caught the poker-playing mind virus at Harvard, was that harmful because it kept him from his studies? Or was it beneficial because it helped sway his decision to drop out, start Microsoft, and become a multibillionaire? Every so often, the world of science experiences something called a paradigm shift. That happens when one of the basic, underlying assumptions we've been living with changes, such as when we shifted from looking at the universe as revolving around the Earth to the Earth revolving around the Sun. Another shift occurred when Einstein discovered the relationships between space and time and between energy and matter. Each of these paradigm shifts took some time to penetrate the scientific community, and even longer to become accepted by the general public. Viruses of the mind and the whole science of memetics represent a major paradigm shift in the science of the mind. Because understanding this new science involves a significant change in the way people think, it's been difficult for them to grasp. As with any paradigm shift, memetics doesn't fit into our existing way of looking at things, of understanding the world. If you're willing to set aside your current thinking long enough to consider four concepts, some or all of which may be new to you, you'll be rewarded with an understanding of memetics. The first concept, the star of the show, is the meme. The meme, M-E-M-E, is the basic building block of culture in the same way the gene is the basic building block of life. Memes are not only the building blocks of culture on a large scale, making up countries, languages, and religions, but also on a small scale. Memes are the building blocks of your mind, the programming of your mental computer. Second is the concept of virus. It's well known that viruses exist in biology and in the world of computers. Now we'll see they also show up in the world of mind and culture, the world of memetics. I'll draw parallels between the three different universes that viruses live in to show what we can expect from mind viruses in the future. The third concept that contributes to this paradigm shift is evolution. Evolution is one of those words that many people use, thinking they are talking about the same thing, but really having different ideas of what it means. The fourth concept necessary to understanding mind viruses is the new science of evolutionary psychology. This field examines the biases and mechanisms of our minds that evolved to support our survival and reproduction. Memetics builds on these four conceptual blocks to form a new paradigm of how culture evolved and is evolving. It illuminates a major decision point for humanity. Will we allow natural selection to evolve us randomly without regard for our happiness, satisfaction, or spirit? Or will we seize the reins of our own evolution and pick a direction for ourselves? Memetics gives us the knowledge and power to direct our own evolution more than we've done at any time in history. A mind virus is not spread by sneezing like the flu or by sex like AIDS. It's not a physical thing. Mind viruses are spread by something as simple as communicating. In a way, mind viruses are the price of one of the freedoms most dear to us, freedom of speech. The more freedom there is to put forth any communication, the more welcoming the environment for mind viruses. Some mind viruses arise spontaneously, some are created intentionally, but all of them share one thing in common. Once created, a virus of the mind gains a life independent of its creator and evolves quickly to infect as many people as possible. Viruses of the mind are not some far-off future worry. They're here with us now, have been with us since before recorded history, and they're evolving to become better and better at their job of infecting us. Our parents unwittingly infected us when we were kids. If you have children, chances are that you are spreading viruses to them every day. Read a newspaper? Catch a mind virus. Listen to the radio? Catch a mind virus. Hang out with your friends and shoot the breeze about nothing in particular? Catch one mind virus after another. If your life isn't going the way you would like, you can bet mind viruses are playing a large part. Having relationship problems? Mind viruses take over parts of your brain and divert you from what would give you long-term happiness. Having trouble in your job or career? Mind viruses cloud your future and steer you along a career path that supports their agenda, not your quality of life. Cult religions are springing up everywhere, the result of more and more powerful mind viruses. These cults take control of people's minds and make members engage in bizarre behavior ranging from odd rituals to mass suicide. If you think you're immune, remember, nobody ever set out intentionally to join a cult and have their mind taken over. It's the work of tricky and pernicious mind viruses. And once the founder of the cult starts the process, the virus of the mind takes on a life of its own. Because of mass media and direct elections, the U.S. and other governments are becoming more and more subject to infection by mind viruses. A politician today cannot be elected without coming up with an effective image that pushes people's buttons and gets the votes. Politicians' well-crafted images are hooks into some of the most elaborate and pervasive mind viruses infecting society today. What brand of soft drink do you buy? The ones that sell the most cost twice as much as the unadvertised store brands. The extra money goes into television advertising, sending out the spores of ever more penetrating mind viruses that take control of your mind and coerce you to push your shopping cart over to their shelf. Successfully programming your mind to believe that you prefer that brand, advertising agencies are among the most brazen and calculating of the mind virus instigators. The unchecked spread of mind viruses shows up most alarmingly in the state of our children today. Starting with the inner cities and quickly spreading, the mind viruses infecting many kids are pushing them into hopelessness, single motherhood, and gang warfare. Many young people seem to be losing their sense of values and taking off in some very unsettling directions. I have an agenda in writing this book, and that is to make a difference in people's lives. Some of the content found herein could be used for self-improvement. You might not expect a book about science to include ideas from the self-development field, but the science of mimetics deals with the mind, with people's lives. Understanding mimetics can naturally help increase the quality of people's lives. What new memes would you choose to reprogram yourself with, given the chance? That's entirely up to you. I choose to program myself with memes that support my values in life, rather than ones that support the agendas of viruses of the mind. You can do that or something different. But you won't have the option to do anything like that unless you understand mimetics. I believe that knowledge of mimetics is important, so I'm spreading the word. Consciously spreading ideas you consider important is one way to combat mind viruses. Ever wonder why, with greater and greater progress in technology, life doesn't seem to get simpler, but just the reverse? Every time you're exposed to a new virus of the mind, your mind takes on just a little more stress, a little more confusion. Mimetics gives much insight into the problem of stress. Taking over bits of your mind and pulling you in different directions, mind viruses distract you from what's most important to you in life and cause confusion, stress, and even despair. Mind viruses infect your mind, programming you with directions that point you away from where you want to go. Since this happens unconsciously, all you're aware of is that as you grow older, life becomes more stressful, less fun, more of a drag, and less meaningful. You may feel your motivation slipping away. You may get less excited about things than you used to. These are some of the effects of infection by a virus of the mind. An infection you can't avoid entirely, short of living in complete isolation from birth. You can, however, begin to disinfect yourself. My hope is that the understanding you gain from this book will be a big first step in that disinfection. But it takes a little bit of effort to teach yourself a new paradigm. It's always been hard for scientists to communicate their ideas to the general public. New scientific ideas tend to rub people the wrong way at first and produce predictable reactions. At first, the new theory is seen as an off-the-wall idea, not a serious threat to the dominant worldview, perhaps a simple variant of some already known theory. Rather than adding to the existing paradigm of cultural evolution, mimetics itself is a new and more powerful paradigm. Complacency fades as the new idea refuses to die, resulting in ridicule by people who clearly and laughingly see that it's inconsistent with something they hold to be true. In Darwin's case, contemporaries laughed at the naturalist's inability to see the necessity of a supreme designer doing the selecting. Darwin was frustrated by his seeming inability to communicate this new paradigm. Similar ridicule of mimetics is seen from time to time in the few places where this topic is discussed. As the new idea gains acceptance, people who have their reputation invested in old paradigms take off their gloves. Darwinism is still being attacked today by creationists who believe it conflicts with their truth. It's the nature of a paradigm shift. Finally, enough people make the leap to the new paradigm that it gains psychological as well as intellectual acceptance. Those who understand the new ideas are no longer as alone and unloved as Columbus among the flat earth believers. The new world agrees on the new paradigm. Peer pressure starts to work for it rather than against it. It's begun to be taught in elementary schools. Scientists can move on to their next challenge. Our minds, it seems, are not well equipped to understand how they themselves work. You, in fact, may be at first very confused or distracted, or suddenly get tired as you hear this. You may even become angry. Those feelings and symptoms are actually the defense mechanisms of mind viruses. They have evolved to be very protective of the parts of your mind that they've stolen, and any attempts to cleanse yourself of them can trigger reactions. If you experience one or more of these reactions while listening to this audiobook, don't worry. The reaction will pass if you ride it out, and you'll be rewarded with a powerful tool for your future and the future of humanity. Chapter 1. Memes. The meme is the secret code of human behavior. A Rosetta Stone finally giving us the key to understanding religion, politics, psychology, and cultural evolution. That key, though, also unlocks Pandora's box, opening up sophisticated new techniques for mass manipulation. The word meme was coined by Oxford biologist Richard Dawkins in his 1976 book, The Selfish Gene. Since then, it's been tossed about by Dawkins and other evolutionary biologists, psychologists, and cognitive scientists, in an effort to flesh out the biological, psychological, and philosophical implications of this new model of consciousness and thought. The meme has a central place in the paradigm shift that's currently taking place in the science of life and culture. In the new paradigm, we look at cultural evolution from the point of view of the meme rather than the point of view of an individual or society. Why bother to look at life in this new, upsetting, inside-out way? Well, for the same reason explorers started to look at the Earth as round instead of flat, and the same reason astronomers stopped looking at the universe as if it revolved around the Earth. It makes a lot more sense, and you can get more exciting things accomplished when you find a better model for explaining the way the world works. Such a model is the theory of the meme, or memetics, which is the study of the workings of memes, how they interact, replicate, and evolve. The science of memetics is the analog to genetics, which studies the same things about genes in the biological universe. It's not so easy to answer even the obvious question, what is a meme? If you ask a biologist, the answer is likely to be along the lines of Dawkins's original definition, which says, the meme is the basic unit of cultural transmission or imitation. According to this definition, everything we call culture is composed of atom-like memes which compete with one another. These memes spread by being passed from mind to mind in the same way genes spread by being passed down through sperm and egg. The memes that win this competition, those that are successful at penetrating the most minds, are the ones responsible for the activities and creations that constitute present-day culture. The most interesting memes to a biologist have to do with behavior. Dawkins's original examples of memes were tunes, ideas, catchphrases, clothes fashions, ways of making pots, or of building arches. According to the biological definition, women wear long skirts one year, then a new short skirt meme catches on for whatever reason, and now women wear short skirts. Popular songs compete for the top 40, each a meme or perhaps a bundle of memes. Then people start humming the catchy tunes, spreading those memes even further. Engineers build bridges on the cantilever principle. Then the suspension bridge is invented, and its meme spreads quickly to become the new state-of-the-art in bridge building. This biological definition doesn't lend much insight into the question of why certain memes spread and others don't. So let's put that definition on hold for a moment and look at some other points of view. If a psychologist were asked what a meme is, he would give a slightly different answer, one that illuminates more the workings of the mind than the components of behavior. Here is psychologist Henry Plotkin's definition. A meme is the unit of cultural heredity analogous to the gene. It is the internal representation of knowledge. This definition stresses the analogy to genes, which are tiny chemical patterns living on strands of DNA. As those tiny DNA patterns cause all kinds of external effects, like eye and hair color and blood type, the memes in your head cause behavioral effects. Likening your mind to a computer, memes are the software part of your programming. The brain and central nervous system, produced by your genes, are the hardware part. The memes in this definition don't live in the external trappings of culture, but in the mind. After all, it's in each individual's mind where the competition for memes takes place. According to this definition, a woman might have in mind a meme like, women who dress fashionably get ahead, and a meme, I want to get ahead. Wearing short skirts when they become fashionable is a behavior that results from having these memes working together in her mind. If there are enough women who have these supporting memes in their minds, all it would take would be one more meme, short skirts are fashionable, to cause a proliferation of raised hemlines. Under this definition, memes are to a human's behavior what our genes are to our bodies, internal representations of knowledge that result in outward effects on the world. Genes are hidden internal pieces of information stored in an embryo that result, with the influence of its environment, in the flesh and blood of the developed organism. Memes are hidden internal representations of knowledge that result, again along with environmental influence, in external behavior and the production of cultural artifacts such as skirts. If I look around and see short skirts, that might cause the production of a meme in my mind, such as, short skirts are in fashion. If someone is having difficulties in life, a memetic psychologist might explore what memes that patient has that are producing the undesirable results. Once discovered, Those memes could be changed, close to what goes on in the practice of cognitive therapy. This way of looking at memes centers around the human mind. An even more abstract definition of meme is from cognitive scientist and philosopher Daniel Dennett. He holds that a meme is an idea, the kind of complex idea that forms itself into a distinct, memorable unit. It is spread by vehicles that are physical manifestations of the meme. Now, this definition really gives you a meme's eye view of the universe. Notice the phrase forms itself. Well, we know ideas don't form themselves. Using the phrase forms itself is a trick to get us to look at things from a meme's point of view. You notice interesting things when you look at a specific meme and see what happens around it, how it spreads, mutates, or dies. Unlike the biological definition, this view of memes places them in the realm of the unseen software of the mind, ready to produce results in the physical world that then carry their own seeds to other human beings. The cognitive definition gives us license to take out a magnifying glass and follow around a specific meme like a private investigator, watching to see how infection with it affects people's behavior, noticing how people spread it, comparing it with competing memes like the suspension bridge with the cantilever, to see what properties it has that make it occupy more or fewer minds than its rivals. One potential pitfall with this definition is the use of the term vehicles. The distinction of a meme-carrying vehicle is not as clear-cut as in biology, where organisms are vehicles for the spread of DNA. Not all meme transmission is as simple as imitating a catchy tune. If memes are our internal programming, we can draw on decades of research in psychology to look at how memes get transmitted into our minds. Once programmed, we behave in complex ways that spread memes indirectly. We want a definition of meme that gives us access to understanding cultural evolution, as in the biological definition. But we want to be clear that memes are internal representations, as in the psychological definition. And we want to look at memes as ideas, as our software, our own internal programming, that produce an effect on the outside world, as in the cognitive definition. The result is the definition I use in this book, that a meme is a unit of information in a mind whose existence influences events such that more copies of itself get created in other minds. This book is a collection of ideas about memes. When you hear and understand it, you'll have memes about memes in your head. Meta-memes. If you write a book about memes, tell someone else about memetics, or lend your copy of Virus of the Mind to someone who hears and understands it, then the meta-memes in your mind will have self-replicated. Memetics is a scientific model. It's looking at ideas, memes, as distinct entities in competition for a share of your mind and a share of everyone else's. When those ideas are harmful ones and they become part of an infectious mind virus, understanding this model can show you how to combat the infection. A neuroscientist would say what is really happening when an idea forms in your mind is that a complex web of electrochemical changes is occurring in various parts of the brain. This is completely valid, it's just not memetics. A psychologist would say what's happening is that there are certain unfulfilled drives, competing instincts, past traumas, and so on, that contribute to the ideas people think and speak. Again, this is a perfectly valid model, but it's not memetics. In the last few years, physics has collided with philosophy. We now understand so much about quantum physics, the physics of particles smaller than atoms, that we realize it's impossible to separate reality from the observer of reality. We were so sure all matter was composed of atoms, then we got so excited when we discovered atoms were themselves made up of protons, neutrons, and electrons. It was a little disturbing when we found that there seemed to be lots of empty space inside the atoms, but those protons and neutrons looked like the basic units of matter, more solid than a rock. Today, we've even further sliced up the proton and neutron. Physicists have equations that describe the behavior of the components of these subatomic particles. The trouble is, they don't really seem to behave like matter. They don't quite behave like energy, though, either. And to top it off, the famous uncertainty principle of Werner Heisenberg states that it's impossible to measure these things further without actually changing them. It's as if they don't really exist in a particular time and place until we attempt to measure them. What all this points out is the memetic nature of everything we call reality. All of our labels for things are memes, not truth with a capital T. The idea of atoms is a meme, invented in ancient Greece. The idea of subatomic particles and those complex formulas that describe them, quantum physics, is a newer set of memes. If your model of reality, as the Greeks believed, was that there were four elements, earth, air, fire, and water, you might spend a lot of time trying to convert lead into gold. If your model of reality is that we have dozens of elements made of immutable and indivisible atoms, you won't waste that time. And if your model of reality is that those atoms can be split, you have research leading to atomic energy and the bomb. The way you describe reality, the memes you have that label things, make a big difference in life. That's why the meta-memes in this book are important. You could easily go through life without any of these ideas about memetics, but knowledge of elements has given us everything from steel to computer chips. Likewise, knowledge of memetics opens up enormous possibilities for understanding many of the problems we now consider impossible. Ending world hunger, preventing human rights abuses, and giving each child an opportunity for education and the pursuit of happiness. These social issues that just won't seem to go away, these persistent, infectious cultural plagues, are universally considered undesirable, but they keep spreading. Memetics identifies these problems as viruses of the mind, giving us, perhaps for the first time, tools powerful enough to deal with them. If I talk about a good meme or a successful meme, I'm talking about an idea or belief that spreads easily throughout the population, not necessarily what we think of as a good idea. Some memes spread directly from mind to mind. Yelling fire in a crowded theater does a great job of spreading that meme from mind to mind quickly. Some spread more indirectly. A mother not wanting to perpetuate the unhappy experience she had when her mother raised her with iron discipline may react by raising her daughter with a very loose rein, a meme for the opposite child-rearing strategy. The granddaughter, in turn, may react to her unhappy experience of the loose rein by resuming grandmother's iron hand. The iron hand meme got transmitted indirectly. Memes can spread in ways that are easy to understand, or they can spread through a complicated chain of cause and effect, almost randomly, chaotically. But out of the chaos occasionally arises a stable web of cause and effect. Something goes on in the world that infects people with certain memes, and those memes eventually influence their host's behavior in such a way that the something gets repeated and/or spread. That something is a virus of the mind. Nazi beliefs quickly spread throughout Hitler's Germany because a virus of the mind was unleashed that successfully infected people with those memes, not because they were good ideas in any other sense. In fact, Nazism was a pathological virus of the mind. A classic case of an epidemic thought infection producing horrifying atrocities as a result of the behavior of people infected with its memes. A virus of the mind infects people with memes. Those memes, in turn, influence the infected people's behavior so that they help perpetuate and spread the virus. I'll cover in detail what kinds of memes and what kinds of mind viruses are good at spreading. For now, I'll just assert that the memes that spread successfully are not necessarily the ones that maximize people's quality of life. In fact, they're often harmful. And the memes that mind viruses infect you with to perpetuate themselves range from distracting to disastrous. The science of memetics, like all sciences, is a set of memes designed to give you access to and power over some aspect of the universe. Remember, I didn't say memetics is the way the universe actually works. Or, we now know memetics is the truth about the functioning of the human mind. It's not the truth. It's a model, like all sciences, like all memes. Once you start believing memes are true with a capital T, you lose your power to pick and choose which memes you're programmed with, and you become more subject to infection by mind viruses. The most interesting thing about memes is not whether they're true or false. It's that they're the building blocks of your mind. The aspect of the universe that memetics gives you access to is a particularly interesting one. What causes you and everyone else to think and behave as they do? The purpose of this book is to teach you, infect you with, the set of memes called memetics. There's a lot you can do with that knowledge, from improving your mental fitness to perhaps creating a new golden age for humanity. To begin with, let's look at how memes work to form your mind and influence your behavior. Chapter 2, mind, and behavior. Memes spread by influencing people's minds and thus their behavior, so that eventually someone else gets infected with the meme. If a meme is in your mind, it can greatly or subtly influence your behavior. In this book, I write as though all your behavior is dictated by a combination of the instructions in your DNA and the mental programming you acquired as you grew up, your genes and your memes. Some people believe there's a third factor in there, a soul, a spirit. This factor is, according to your beliefs, either a divinely injected spark or simply a biological trait like an opposable thumb or high IQ, some combination of genes and memes. Fortunately, we don't have to resolve that particular philosophical issue right here, since either belief works fine for understanding memetics. There are certain tendencies you have because you're a product of nature. These tendencies support your survival and reproduction. They are things like your sex drive and your desire to breathe, eat, sleep, and so forth. Scientists have a number of different names for different brands of these tendencies, but I'm just going to lump them all together under the term instincts. Unfortunately, human instincts evolved to support our survival a long time ago and didn't take into account the kind of world we live in today. In modern times, these prehistoric instincts often don't work any better than a deer's instinct to freeze in the face of oncoming headlights. Fortunately, we have conscious minds that we can use to override our instincts and propel us in the direction of our pursuit of happiness. So for the next few chapters, which outline in painful detail just how poorly adapted we are to modern life, remember, instincts are just instincts. Tendencies are just tendencies. Knowing what they are gives you more power to consciously override them if you choose. It's important to understand human instincts because they have a great influence on the evolution of memes. The memes that appeal to people's instincts are more likely to replicate and spread throughout the population than the ones that don't. Everything you do that is not instinctual is the result of programming. You are programmed by memes. If you went to college, you probably did so to get educated, which is to say, to get programmed with a set of memes that would support your success in life. Having been to college, you have thoughts and behaviors you wouldn't have had if you were just going on instinct. Most memes that people are programmed with are acquired without any conscious intent. They just infect you, and there you are, living your life by their programming. Such programming includes your religious or atheistic upbringing, the example your parents set of how relationships work or don't, the TV shows and commercials you've watched. I'll cover the ways in which we get programmed, especially how unwanted programming gets into our minds. First, though, let's look at the nature of that programming. Let's look at the nature of memes. What kinds of memes are there? I've divided memes into three classes: distinctions, which act as knives used to slice up reality; strategies, that is, beliefs about which causes will produce which effects; and associations, our attitudes about everything in life. Each class of meme works to program you in a different way. This division into classes is simply a convenience and certainly not true with a capital T. The universe is full of stuff. However, anything we say about that stuff is purely a concept, a set of memes, invented by human beings. All concepts are composed of memes. For instance, the United States are only states because we have invented 50 distinctions, memes, carving out that territory. Alabama isn't a reality, it's just there because we say so, because we're programmed with a meme for Alabama. If we didn't have an Alabama meme, that land would just be more dirt. Likewise, the Earth is simply a distinction, a meme, we invented because it was convenient to put edges around the place we live in order to distinguish it from the rest of the universe. To the universe, it's all just stuff. You may say, but there really are edges. There's where the dirt ends and the atmosphere begins, or where the atmosphere gives way to outer space. Really? Dirt? Atmosphere? Outer space? They're all memes. If you think dirt is really dirt, not a meme we invented for our convenience, then all you'll ever have is dirt. If you see that it's a meme, not the truth, you open up the possibility of other memes to talk about the same thing. Elements, crystals, subatomic particles. Remember that viewed through an electron microscope, it's all mostly empty space. How about this one? You are simply a distinction, a meme we invented because it's convenient to talk about the parts of the universe that feel pain when you hit them with a hammer. To the universe, there's no you. Or human beings, or giraffes, or solar systems, or galaxies, all of those are human-invented distinctions. They're all memes. Now, one more point. Everything I just said about the distinction between objective reality and concepts is a concept. It's a meme. To the universe, there's no such thing as a concept. I just drew this distinction because it was convenient to use when we're talking about memetics. Distinctions are one kind of meme. They are ways of carving up the world by categorizing or labeling things. When you create a distinction, you gain access to some things and lose access to others. It's useful to be conscious of what distinction memes you're programmed with and to know that all the distinctions you draw are human-invented and not reality. Distinctions, as I just mentioned, are one kind of meme that contributes to your programming. Someone educated or programmed in the memes of French will behave differently in France from someone who has no knowledge of the language. His mind will recognize meaning where others will only hear noise. Someone programmed with the distinction Coca-Cola will be more likely to buy Coke than the store brand of cola. Her mind will recognize the familiar red can with the white swish. The store brand will not register because she has no distinction meme for it. Now, the Coca-Cola company knows this, by the way, which is why their logo has grown bigger and bigger over the years until today the entire front panel of a 6-foot-tall Coke machine bears the distinctive red and white trademark. Advertisers, politicians, and anyone else who wants your money or support are very interested in programming you with certain distinctions over others and understanding the distinctions you see the world through so they can take advantage of them. What are you more likely to buy for breakfast, a slice of chocolate cake or a chocolate chip muffin? Calling a round piece of high-fat chocolate cake a muffin takes advantage of the distinctions you have around breakfast food and increases sales. My local cafe has just come out with scone-shaped brownies. Of course, not many people would eat brownies for breakfast, but scones! Another kind of meme is a strategy. A kind of floating rule of thumb that tells you what to do when you come across an applicable situation in order to achieve some desired result. For example, if you drive, you have a set of distinction memes having to do with driving, traffic lights, speed limits, lane markers, and so on. You also have a set of strategy memes giving you your driving behavior. When you come to a red light and you want to turn right, stop, and then turn. At a four-way stop, wait for all the cars that were ahead of you to go, then you go. When you see a cop, slow down. The effect of all these strategy memes is to avoid accidents, get where you're going, or avoid being ticketed. You can see these strategy memes at work unconsciously every day. Since the future is unpredictable, strategy memes are never cast in stone truths about how to behave. All strategy memes are approximations, based on the idea that if you behave in a certain way, you'll have a certain effect on the world. Strategies are beliefs about cause and effect. When you are programmed with a strategy meme, you unconsciously believe behaving a certain way is likely to produce a certain effect. That behavior may trigger a chain of events that results in spreading the strategy meme to another mind. As the world changes and as you change and grow, the relationship between cause and effect changes too. For instance, people learn many of their strategies for relating to people by the time they're 5 years old. Often those aren't the most powerful strategies to use as adults. For example, a 2-year-old boy might become programmed with a strategy meme for sulking. He might copy this behavior from another child or learn through trial and error that sulking brings extra attention and love. Either way, he now has this strategy meme as part of his mental programming, waiting for an applicable situation to fire up and take effect. His mother's on the phone? Sulk. She ends the call and comes over to give the kid some attention. Other people's mothers may respond better to tantrums, cajoling, or smiles. Their kids would get programmed with appropriate strategy memes to that environment. In other words, your parents' behavior directs a lot of your initial programming. 30 years later, that 2-year-old boy is now a 32-year-old man in a job where he doesn't feel appreciated. He may still be programmed with that strategy meme he acquired at the age of 2. However, sulking in that new scenario probably wouldn't cause as satisfying a result as it did when he was a child. Unfortunately, he doesn't even realize he's doing it. As adults, we have the power and tools to influence others far beyond what we had as two-year-olds. The problem is that our heads are full of old strategy memes, and we have office buildings full of adults sulking, throwing tantrums, cajoling, and smiling in an unconscious and ineffective effort to satisfy some unmet need. We often don't realize we're programmed with strategy memes, and the ones we have are often ineffective. Understanding the strategy memes we're programmed with gives us the power to consciously choose which strategies to follow using our full brain power. A third kind of meme is an association, which links two or more memes in your mind. For instance, if I smell creosote, and I only know it's creosote because I have a distinction meme for creosote, I associate it with the Boston waterfront from my childhood, where my dad would take me on special occasions. I like that smell. It reminds me of happy times. If advertisers knew I liked it, and if other people liked it just as much, we'd soon see creosote-smelling ads for vacation spots to take advantage of that association. Said in another way, I have a certain attitude about creosote. I have attitudes about my work, about all the people in my life, about television, about memes, about everything. These attitudes are memes that associate other memes with one another, so that when we are present to one, we become present to the other. Advertisers don't wait for you to develop your own association memes. They go ahead and program you with their own through television, with baseball, hot dogs, apple pie, and Chevrolet, sexy men and Diet Coke, sexy women and beer, sexy women and computers, cars, garden tools, fan belts, and so on. Being programmed with association memes influences your behavior. This is the classic experiment Pavlov performed on his dog. He rang a bell each time he was about to feed it. Soon the dog developed an association meme, the bell and the food. When the programming was complete, the dog began to salivate upon hearing the bell. Advertisers want you to salivate, or the sexual equivalent, when you see their product. Associations are connections between memes. When you're programmed with an association meme, the presence of one thing triggers a thought or feeling about something else. This causes a change in your behavior, which can ultimately spread the meme to another mind. Association memes are subtle, and their exploitation can be insidious. Cults program their members with association memes linking good feelings with the teachings of the group. It takes only a short time for people to believe that their quality of life, or perhaps their very survival, depends on staying in the cult, that they should be grateful for the cult giving them life. Those of us who are not cult members may have the same kind of programming, if not quite so intense, about the company we work for, capitalism, democracy, our family, our religion, and our spouse. Memes can and do run your life, probably to a far greater degree than you realize. How can a meme own you? The most straightforward way is through the laws and customs of your society. Men's and women's roles in society, for instance, were ruled 100 years ago by memes that seem odd, offensive, or even ridiculous today, like a woman's place is in the home, behind every great man there's a woman ought not make waves, and so on. Out of these memes came a loss of opportunity for both women and men. That changed only when a few committed people refused to buy into those memes and worked to pry them out of people's minds and replace them with new ones, such as equal opportunity, a woman can be anything she wants to be, a woman without a man is like a fish without a bicycle, and so on. Those old sexist memes severely limited women's options in life just because most people were programmed with them. The laws we live under are another example of how memes rule us. While not many would argue with laws against crimes such as murder, other laws seem a bit more arbitrary, yet greatly affect the way people live their lives. In the former Soviet Union, people lived under laws that forbade speaking out against the government and criminalized making a profit, while in the United States, people go to prison for growing marijuana and insider trading, violating the rules of the stock market. The price of civilization is compromise. Without general agreement on millions of ideas, big and small, the incredibly complex society we have built would quickly disintegrate. Just think what life would be like if most of us did not agree on the memes of property ownership, contracts, what the colors on traffic lights mean, or saving and withdrawing money from a bank. Take a look at just the distinction meme of money. What if one day we all changed our minds about the idea of what money was used for and what it was worth, and discovered a bunch of dirty green pieces of paper in our pockets? These broad societal memes are too many to enumerate, yet they have tremendous influence over the way we live our lives. We need to understand that they are all artificial, man-made, and in most cases, not a proud result of conscious choice such as the U.S. Constitution. Most of these memes, like the pre-20th century sex roles, just sort of evolved without anybody seriously questioning them. It is, of course, nothing new to question societal norms. People throughout history have written about the silliness of living in a cage of arbitrary social rules. But the task of changing those rules is difficult because of the way viruses of the mind spread ideas. It's not a straightforward task to do so. Memetics gives those who understand it the opportunity to better influence the spread of memes. Slavery to memes doesn't stop at the national level. Any group of people who interact with each other is subject to peer pressure, the pressure on each individual to behave and think as the rest of the group does. Peer pressure often gets the blame for inducing children to smoke, take drugs, and join gangs, but adults are also subject to it. Companies such as Microsoft, where I worked for many years, have an elaborate internal culture that constantly reinforces certain memes. In Microsoft's case, elitism, commitment, intolerance of shoddiness, and hard work were large parts of that culture. When people get immersed in a culture with strong new memes, it tends to be a sink-or-swim proposition. Either you change your mind, succumbing to peer pressure and adopting the new memes as your own, or you struggle with the extremely uncomfortable feeling of being surrounded by people who think you're crazy or inadequate. The memes you are personally programmed with, even without considering the culture around you, affect your life in almost every conceivable way. That's why a virus of the mind is something to be taken seriously. These viruses fill your mind up with memes, ideas, attitudes, and beliefs that make the results you get in life very different from the results you may want. One of the ways the memes you're programmed with greatly affect your future is through self-fulfilling prophecy. Believing that something will happen often makes it more likely to happen. A child who's told repeatedly by parents that she is a successful person who can be anything she wants to be is programmed for success, while a child who grows up parentless in the inner city, seeing nothing but failure and despair, is likewise programmed for failure. Mind viruses often fill our heads with self-sabotaging attitudes, or memes, that hinder us from making the most of our lives. Aside from steering our futures, the distinction memes we're programmed with form a perceptual filter on the immediate present world around us. People cannot take in any more than a small fraction of all the information that hits their sensory organs every second. What information do we take in and what do we filter out? Our unconscious minds decide for us based on the distinction memes we're programmed with, controlling what information we perceive. They actually make reality look different to you. Most people haven't consciously trained their minds to look for the information that's most important to them. Quite a difficult and lengthy process, so that choice is left up to chance and the influence of mind viruses. Examples of perceptual filters abound. Ever buy a new car and suddenly notice dozens of others like it on the road where you hadn't before? You've got a new distinction meme. If a friend notices the new car you bought out of your new distinction meme, and start seeing them all over the road, you've just spread that meme to another mind. Advertising works by altering your perceptual filter to pay more attention to, or have better feelings toward, the advertiser's product. Politicians with their slogans and rhetoric hope to infect your mind with memes that make you perceive them as a good choice to vote for. The world is full of memes spread by mind viruses, all competing for a share of your mind, your perception, your attention. They care nothing for your well-being, but instead add to your confusion and subtract from your fulfillment. Your attitudes about the past also influence your life. A current trend in America is to label more and more people victims of cruel, unfair, or neglectful treatment in their pasts. While it's certainly a valid point of view, those who look upon themselves as victims of their personal histories typically experience continuing emotional pain and a feeling of powerlessness. A good course in self-empowerment trains people to view themselves as accountable for their entire lives, even those unfair and victimizing events of the past. Once people make this sometimes difficult shift in attitude, in their memetic programming, they often go through a relatively brief period of grief or sadness, followed by an experience of letting go and moving forward with their lives. There are no whole truths, only half-truths. The distinction meme truth, with a capital T, meaning absolute fact or authority, is not part of the new paradigm of memetics. The truth of any proposition depends upon the assumptions you make in considering it, or the distinction memes you use in thinking about it. You might say that the sun rises in the east and sets in the west. Is that true? Maybe it's more accurate to say that the earth rotates. But is that true? Really, everything in the universe is influenced to a small degree by everything else. What about all those eternal questions whose answers might be called eternal truths? Is there life after death? Depends on what you mean by life, by death, even by the word is. It's dangerous to latch onto one answer without remembering the assumptions present in the question. Every time you have a new set of distinction memes, you have a whole new philosophy. Labeling a meme true lodges it in your programming and eliminates your conscious ability to choose your own memes. Once some authority convinces you something is true or right or something you should do, you are effectively programmed. If you realize there are only half-truths, that the truth of any meme depends upon the context in which it exists, you have a powerful weapon against the programming of mind viruses. Do you obey rules or any form of authority other than yourself? Laws, your superior at work, doctors, parents? I hope you're respectful of your fellow inhabitants of the planet, but I also hope you realize that any time you're obeying instructions, you're ripe for exploitation by mind viruses. Viruses work by taking instruction-obeying mechanisms and co-opting them. If you are an instruction-obeying mechanism, you will be co-opted, no doubt about it. What can we do about it? For most of us, it doesn't work to shut ourselves out of all cultural institutions. Participating in jobs, relationships, clubs, and judicial systems seems essential or at least practical in our attempts to make lives for ourselves. But to avoid becoming enslaved by mind viruses, we need to pick and choose. And probably the best bumper sticker advice ever given is question authority. So long as you don't read it to mean contradict authority. Mind viruses have just as big a field day with automatic rebels as with automatic yes men, both of which behave predictably according to their memetic programming. The point to understand is that you have memetic programming so you can reprogram yourself when mind virus infections are interfering with your life. A mind virus thrives on your belief that its memes are true. People defend the memes they're programmed with like they're protecting their own lives. The mind virus co-opts your intelligence and problem-solving ability in order to preserve itself. The only way we learn and grow is by changing our belief systems, changing our memetic programming. Yet paradoxically, we tend to hang on to that programming as if it would kill us to be wrong about any of our memes. Cultural institutions like countries, businesses, or organizations are nothing more than the results of cultural evolution, exploiting whatever resources were available as they evolved. There's nothing sacred about any of them unless you choose to make it so. Wherever there are masses of people confused about their own purpose in life and willing to take orders, cultural institutions will spring up to exploit them. Rarely is such an institution consciously chosen by its populace to enhance the lives of the participants. Institutions that program people with self-serving memes are the ones that win. A cultural institution that programs people with self-serving memes is a virus of the mind. That doesn't necessarily mean it's a bad thing. But if I were you, I'd want to know which mind viruses were competing for use of my life, so that I could at least pick and choose among them, if not invent my own. According to the new paradigm of memetics, the mind works as a combination of instinct and memetic programming. It's possible to consciously choose your own memetic programming to better serve whatever purpose you choose to have for your life. Without understanding memetics, though, the programming people have tends to be whatever they happen to get as they went through childhood and life. As you'll hear in the next few chapters, much of that programming is the result of infection by mind viruses. To begin to see that, take a look at what a virus is and how it works. Chapter 3, Viruses. Possibly billions of years ago, there arose through evolution a new type of organism, if it can even be called an organism. The new thing had the unusual property that it could invade the reproductive facilities of other organisms and put them to use making copies of itself. We call this creature a virus. Viruses exist in three universes that we know of. The first is the universe of biology, of organisms, of people, plants, and animals. It's where viruses were first discovered. Plants get them, and so do we. There are countless varieties of biological viruses on Earth and countless copies of each. They remain the cause of some of our most deadly and least curable or understood diseases, ranging from the common cold to AIDS or worse. The second universe where viruses exist is the man-made world of computers, networks, data, and programming. Viruses weren't discovered in this world. They were invented or programmed. In one of the best-known incidents of inventing a computer virus, Robert Morris Jr., a student at Cornell University, tried an unauthorized experiment on a government-funded nationwide computer network in November 1988. He wrote a program designed to make copies of itself and install a copy on each computer in the network. A small error in the program, however, caused it to keep going after it was supposed to stop, clogging up the entire network with millions of copies of itself and crippling the network for hours. Government officials considered this bit of hacking so serious that they charged the astonished student with federal crimes. His program, which became known as the Internet Worm, was a form of computer virus. He had tapped into the almost limitless power a virus has once unleashed, and at the same time experienced the loss of any control over the virus by its creator. By now, the term computer virus is well known, but this electronic form of virus proves to be almost as difficult to cure as the biological kind. An antivirus industry has sprung up around it, capitalizing on the fact that computer programs are much easier to understand than DNA. The high-speed, excellent communication, and large storage capabilities of computers make them an attractive target for delinquents and a welcoming environment for viruses. The third universe is the main subject of this book, the universe of the mind, of culture, of thought. This is the universe in which the paradigm shift is taking place. From an old model of cultural evolution based on innovation and conquest, we're shifting to a new model based on memetics and viruses of the mind. Mind viruses are both discovered and invented. They can evolve naturally or be created consciously. The community of people obeying the orders of Jim Jones, their leader, were following the programming of some memes that resulted in their death. Why has Pepsi spent millions of dollars broadcasting commercials that show people drinking their product while endlessly repeating, uh-huh? Why do some outlandish stories get endlessly perpetuated as urban legends? Why do some chain letters travel around and around the world, seemingly unstoppable? The answers to all those questions have to do with viruses of the mind. The mind has all the properties a virus needs to exist, just as do cells and computers. In fact, our society of instant communication and access to information is improving daily as a gracious host to mind viruses. Keeping in mind that the virus concept applies to all three realms, biology, computer, and mind, let's start by looking at the workings of biological viruses. We can't talk about viruses without talking about copying. That's what a virus does, after all. It makes copies of itself. That wouldn't be of much more than intellectual interest to us if it were not for one fact. A virus uses us as its laboratory for making copies of itself, frequently leaving a mess behind. A virus is more than a parasite, more than an infiltrator, more than an unchecked self-copier. A virus is all of these at the same time. A virus is anything that takes external copying equipment and puts it to work making copies of itself. One reason to take viruses seriously is that making copies of yourself, self-replicating, is the most powerful force in the universe. Where there was once one, now there are 2, 4, 8, 16, 32, 64, 128, 256, 512, etc. Growth by doubling is called exponential growth, and it works very quickly to fill up whatever space is available. An atomic bomb works that way. One fissioned atom causes others to split, which in turn cause more atoms to split, all releasing energy. When the space available inside the bomb is filled, kablooey. In the case of a typical biological virus, The copying equipment it commandeers is in the cells of the organism being attacked. Cells use that equipment in the normal course of their affairs to manufacture proteins, duplicate nucleic acids, and prepare to divide in two. The virus infiltrates the cell and fools the copying equipment into copying the virus in addition to, or instead of, its usual workload. Some biological viruses work by penetrating the cell's defenses as a syringe needle penetrates skin. They inject instructions into the cell so that its duplicating machinery manufactures more syringe-like viruses. Eventually, the cell bursts and the new virus copies spread to other cells. Anywhere there is copying machinery, there can be viruses. Modern computer networks, designed specifically to copy and transmit data, were a natural target for malicious or mischievous hackers to create man-made viruses, which they in fact did relatively quickly. Unlike their biological counterparts, all known computer viruses are man-made, which is to be expected since computers are designed especially to minimize mutations or corruption of data. A mutation is an error in copying. It produces a defective, or improved, copy instead of an exact duplicate of the original. A virus can exist anywhere there is copying going on. For billions of years, the only significant copying going on was that of DNA and associated molecules. We've learned a lot about the physical mechanism by which DNA gets copied, but it's still quite a leap to understand how the information in the DNA causes a human being to self-assemble from a single cell to an adult. It's the difference between understanding how the Encyclopedia Britannica is printed and understanding the complete functioning of the world described in its volumes. A virus doesn't change the way in which DNA gets copied. A virus inserts new information to be copied, along with or instead of the rest. One of the instructions that the virus gives is to manufacture more viruses and in some way spread them to other hosts. The spreading can be direct, as a cell that fills so full of viruses that it bursts, or indirect, as a virus that induces sneezing and a virus-rich runny nose. Computer viruses work the same way. First, the vandal programmer inserts the virus code into some other program that she expects will be run by unsuspecting users. When it is run, the virus code quickly copies itself into some or all of the other programs it detects on the computer. As soon as one of those infected programs gets copied by humans or automatically onto another computer and is run, the new computer becomes infected and the process begins anew. Putting aside the social implications of this form of vandalism, let's look at the common elements between biological and computer viruses. Something foreign gets inserted into an environment. Copying takes place in that environment. There's some kind of instruction following going on in that environment, and the foreign body gets copied, possibly issues new instructions, and spreads to new environments so the process can continue. A successful virus must let its host live long enough to spread the virus. That's odd, though. Wouldn't it follow that the most successful viruses would let the host keep living and spreading them as long as possible? Wouldn't that mean we should expect viruses to be on our side in general, since our health is linked to their survival? That depends on what you mean by on our side. The success of a virus in the long term depends upon its ability to replicate without killing its hosts. A virus that spread to 10 other people and killed you in the process would be quite successful enough short term. A virus that immediately killed every host wouldn't be successful, just as a computer virus that instantly crashed every computer it infected wouldn't last long. But longevity of the host is just one possibility. A virus's mission is to make as many copies of itself as possible. Wait a minute. Why is that the virus's mission? Do we really believe that viruses have some kind of guiding purpose to their lives? What does it even mean to say that a virus has a mission? Why couldn't a virus just be content with infecting one cell, retiring, kicking back, and watching the endoplasmic reticulum for the rest of its days? Well, the short answer is, if it did, it wouldn't be a virus as it's defined here. I'm only using the word virus to refer to things that penetrate, copy, possibly issue instructions, and spread. There's a very subtle point here, one that's important to understand because it runs through this entire book. When we look at life from the point of view of a virus, we're not saying the virus is alive, can think, or even has a point of view. Looking at things from the point of view of a virus just gives us insight into what's interesting about viruses, how and why they spread. We're interested in viruses because they're penetrating, copying, issuing of instructions, and especially spreading is a powerful force in our universe. It's fascinating, exciting, and even scary to discover something that once released goes off on its own and spreads itself to the world with no further effort on the part of its creator. The DNA viruses have found effective ways to spread via the copying mechanisms of our cells. The criminals who create computer viruses have found effective ways to spread them via the copying mechanisms of computers. All of which brings us to the most interesting copying mechanism of all, the human mind. Our minds excel both at copying information and at following instructions, and are ideally susceptible to infection by mind viruses. They can penetrate our minds because we are so adept at learning new ideas and information. They are copied by us communicating with each other, something we're getting better and better at. Mind viruses issue instructions by programming us with new memes that affect our behavior. They spread when the chain of events stemming from that new behavior reaches an uninfected mind. Examples of viruses of the mind range from fashion fads to religious cults. They can be any bit of culture whose existence touches people, causing them to shift their thinking and thus their behavior, eventually causing reinforcement or proliferation of that same bit of culture. At this point, I want to introduce a distinction between mind viruses that arose spontaneously and ones that were invented by human consciousness. I will call the naturally arising ones cultural viruses and the human-crafted ones designer viruses. A designer virus is carefully crafted to infect people with a set of memes that influence them to spread the virus throughout the population. Designer viruses and cultural viruses can be equally damaging to your pursuit of happiness, although for many people it doesn't feel as bad to have your life ruined by a natural set of circumstances as it does to have some manipulative no-goodnik get the best of you. But despite the difference in perception, the effect of these two kinds of mind viruses is the same. You unwittingly have a portion of yourself diverted from what you might otherwise be doing with your life, and instead devoted to doing the work of the mind virus. I see much more potential for help than harm through understanding the mind virus, and even though it involves thinking about things in unfamiliar ways, I suggest we do whatever it takes to understand it, tame it, and put it to work for our best interests and the best interests of our children, and our children's children. To begin that, let's take a look at one of the most misunderstood of all scientific theories, evolution by natural selection. Chapter 4, Evolution. There's no scientific theory that's both so well known and so disputed as the theory of evolution. Perhaps I should say theories of evolution, because even among respected scientists, there's significant disagreement over just how evolution works. Outside of science, of course, we find even more disagreement. The reason, I believe, is a cloudy understanding of just what's involved in evolution. In the broadest sense, evolution simply means that things change over time. As things change, the things that are good at sticking around and replicating themselves do so, while the other things don't. The things that are good at sticking around and self-replicating are called replicators. The two most interesting replicators in the universe today are the gene, which is the basic replicator in the universe of biology, and the meme, which is the basic replicator in the universe of the mind. When we use the word evolution, as in the evolution of species by natural selection, we're making a distinction between the winners of that battle, which continue to exist, and the losers, which don't. Natural selection means that the forces of nature are doing the selecting, as opposed to the artificial selection of breeding pedigreed dogs, for example.